98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bigley Blast.
Welcome to a big red reckoning, especially if your name is Vance Joseph. The Cardinals defensive coordinator is not on a hot seat now, but he was earlier in the season, and now he has to find a way to generate a pass rush without Chandler Jones at a pivotal point in the season. In other words, he has to do his job, because that's what a good defensive coordinator does. He doesn't have to be Todd Bowles, who was elite at disguising his blitz packages, who had a clear philosophy, and players who knew exactly what Bowles wanted and what he was saying at all times. But Joseph should be able to manufacture pressure, to dial up exotic blitzes without triggering all sorts of mental errors and communication problems on defense. He should find a way to integrate Isaiah Simmons, especially since Steve Keim made it clear this morning that he indeed wants to see him on the field. Of course he does, because Simmons is trending well behind other defensive rookies in the NFL, and that does not reflect well on the GM who selected him. So in the next couple of weeks, Joseph is facing a great offense and a great quarterback, a Monday night football game in Dallas and a division rival in Seattle. And then comes the bye week, where some really hard decisions might be coming into focus, including the value of the current defensive coordinator. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Go test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler at Chapman BMW on Camelback. You can find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
I got to know.
Well, the secret is you got to coordinate.
Uh-huh.
Most people don't coordinate. See, you got to coordinate.
There it is.
Wow.
The secret to all of it. You got to coordinate. The light is shining on you, Vance Joseph.
Yeah, yes, it is, because, and for a couple of different reasons. I believe the football season's at a serious juncture based on the quality of competition, based on the acknowledgement that the Cardinals should be 5-0 at this point, at least 4-1 at this point, and they are not. The one thing we might find out in the next couple of weeks is that this is going to be another bridge year for the Cardinals before they really have a chance to make a run at something.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning they have more experiences, their core players grow a little more, they win some big games, they lose some games, they're not good enough to get into the playoffs, but they made progress, and then everybody points to next year. I don't know if I accept that. In a year in which you traded for DeAndre Hopkins in what might be the last year for Larry Fitzgerald, I would really like to see this come together quicker rather than later. And I think they've got enough quarterback to make it happen. But it comes down to a matter of coaching. Cliff Kingsbury, can he dial up this offense and get it to a point where on a consistent weekly basis, it is monstrously difficult to defend?
Mm-hmm.
You think that they could get to that point?
You'd think. I mean, that's the goal. That was the plan that was envisioned when Cliff Kingsbury was handed the job.
Right.
If you they've shown glimpses, but it's not there. They're not consistently that team.
No. If you've got the weapons and it's not happening, then you don't have the right schematics. You don't have the right strategy. You don't have the right X's and O's. Similarly, defensively, there have been a lot of moments under a Vance Joseph defense dating back to 2019 that have had me scratching my head. Chandler Jones dropping into coverage, tight ends running wild all over the field, a secondary that had no clue what was being called and where to be and how to adjust. Even recently, we heard Patrick Peterson kind of pass the buck of his own personal problems on the lack of communication and coordination on defense. Okay?
Coordinate.
So I think these next couple of games, Vance Joseph really has to show what he's all about, because if this is one of those bridge years where the Cardinals are sub 500, 7-9, 6-10, don't make the playoffs, I think you can wave goodbye to Vance Joseph. I think that will be the end of him. If the Cardinals lose badly on Monday Night Football and get blown out of the water by the Seattle Seahawks, might happen at the bye week. Now, I'm not trying to stir a pot to get a guy fired. That's It's unsavory, and I don't like to roll like that.
It's not unwarranted. It's not like you're coming out of nowhere with this.
No, no, no.
In the offseason, they said he was on the hot seat.
Yeah, this is exactly right. And we saw this happen to Mike McCoy mid-season based on an offense that had no cohesion. That was an offense that had no coordination.
Well, Steve Keim himself came out in the offseason and said, we didn't give Vance enough bullets for the gun last year. That was the plan, you know. The bullets, Devon Kennard, Jordan Phillips, Devondre Campbell, Isaiah Simmons. You know, one of those bullets is not in the chamber right now, and Isaiah Simmons, but you get what I'm saying. When you make a statement like that publicly as a general manager, okay, defense wasn't good. It's kind of on me.
But not now.
Not now. Not when I give you, you know, upgraded talent on that position. Vance Joseph spoke to the media yesterday, and the big question now, at least one of the big overarching questions with Dallas is, with Dak Prescott gone for the season with the ankle injury, Andy Dalton step in, how much do you think it changes things offensively? Vance Joseph.
When you watch the game on Sunday after Dak left the game, nothing changed, you know. They're very fortunate to have a guy like Andy Dalton who's an experienced guy, you know, so as far as the volume of the offense, I think Andy's going to nail that part, you know, so nothing changes for him. And that's the value of having a guy like Dalton, you know, as your backup. So they've played, I think, five games, and that's the five games that we're watching and game planning from and assuming it's going to be the same offense. Obviously, Zeke, you know, could be a bigger part of what they do. I mean, he's always a guy you have to stop, so that won't change for us. But as far as the offense changing, it probably won't change much with Andy being a veteran guy.
I think the idea of change is a big idea going into this game. And I don't disagree with Vance Joseph. I don't think you're going to see a drastically different approach offensively from the Dallas Cowboys. What needs to change, though, is what the Cardinals are doing defensively. I don't think the Cardinals can not alter their schematics defensively with Chandler Jones being out, do what they've done for the first five games and leave Dallas with a win. I don't believe that can happen.
I agree with you.
I think when you have a backup quarterback, and I don't care if it's a first-year guy or if it's a guy with tons of starting experience like Andy Dalton, you have to force the issue. You've got to put pressure. You've got to create opportunities for your defense to take the ball away. Vance Joseph has not shown that to be a strength in his defensive philosophy. Now over 21 games in two seasons. There's too much firepower offensively from this Cowboys team if you're going to let them march down the field and do what they want to do and sit back and Andy Dalton's got time to throw. You got to force the issue sometimes. That's why I think the light is shining on Vance Joseph. How much can you tweak things? How much, whatever phrase you want to use, what can you dial up to put the Cowboys offense on its heels? That is incumbent on the coordinator this week to make things easier for the players that are out there, and we'll see what happens. He has not shown a lot of, you know, we've commended the flexibility of Cliff Kingsbury as a play caller.
Yes.
And I think that trend has continued this year. It hasn't been completely smooth sailing. I have not seen the same flexibility on the defensive side from its coordinator, Vance Joseph. Do you agree?
I definitely agree with that. And then the times that they have tried different things, there have been breakdowns. There have been elements of the secondary not aware of what was going on. It just hasn't been seamless in times like this. And again, I don't mean to compare everybody who coordinates a defense to Todd Bowles, because Todd Bowles is about as good as it's ever been done. Buddy Ryan with the Bears was phenomenal. Wade Phillips is really good. There are guys who are Mike Zimmer, Dick LeBeau. These guys really know what they're doing defensively with schematics. They really understand how to move pieces around a chessboard. Sometimes Vance Joseph looks like he's trying to move a rook diagonally. See what I did there? You can't do that.
That's a reference not everybody gets.
Yeah, right, see? Right, it's true.
So far he hasn't moved the rook at all off the bench.
Yeah, I'd like to see the rook move diagonally or forward or backward or something.
That's pretty good. I wish I would have taken more time and developed that. That would have been really
good. I thought that's what you were implying.
I wasn't even going there. I was just trying to describe a a chess piece that moves in a very distinct position or distinct manner.
What's the one that moves in the L shape? Is that the bishop?
That's the horsey, man.
Oh, that's the knight.
The knight,
that's right.
The knight. Or the horsey.
Yeah, that's the horsey.
I believe it was Garry Kasparov that once referred to as the horsey.
The horsey,
uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. The bishops go diagonally as far as you want them. Yeah. The
pawns go diagonally, not for a long time.
Yeah.
It's all coming back
to
me.
Well, the pawns go diagonally when they're capturing another piece. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they move horizontally. Does that make sense?
I haven't played chess in 35 years,
yeah,
probably.
Really?
Yeah. Another possible hobby for me.
Yeah,
maybe not. I'm sorry, I derailed everything.
There's some really good online chess games, by the way.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so then you get the idea, okay, not only is the bye week coming up for the Cardinals, and that's going to be interesting because it's dovetailing right around the NFL trade deadline. And there are guys out there. Margus Hunt is a defensive end who's out there. He's visiting the Cincinnati Bengals. The Cardinals could get involved in somebody. There are some names out there, but they're expensive names. And I don't know if the Cardinals are willing to go down that path unless they feel that they're close. And until then, what they really need to do is they need their defensive coordinator to effectively not replace Chandler Jones, because you can't do that. He's a defensive player of the year candidate. At least he was going into this year.
Yeah.
But you need to manufacture some pressure. That's what the good defensive coordinators can do. And so if it means bringing Patrick Peterson off a wide edge, make sure you got Patrick Peterson's responsibilities covered on the back end. It's coordinating.
Yeah, I mean, Hassan Reddick, he's a guy that's going to be called upon. Here was Vance Joseph on Hassan Reddick.
I've seen a guy that's very comfortable, you know, in his role. I mean, he wanted to be an outside backer, and from the last month of the season last year, you can see this guy coming on strong, and you can see his confidence building every single week. He had a great practice today, picking off balls and rushing, sitting edges. So he is an outside backer, and he's a good one, you know. So hopefully he can continue to get better and to play play good football for us.
Dennis Gardeck stepped in, 2 sacks. He was one of the stories of that win over the Jets, so his opportunities might be more than 10 snaps. Mm-hmm. Dennis Gardeck was the guest on Big Red Rage last night and says he feels pretty comfortable out there.
I see myself as an edge guy. I do understand that physically I'm not quite as large as those guys up mm-hmm. there. But I like rolling off the ball. I think it's different seeing everything from one side as opposed to being off the ball and having things kind of coming at you from both sides. So I like playing from the edge and being able to play fast, and I like putting my forehead on people, so I get to do that up on the line.
Mm-hmm. Speaking Wolf's language there.
This is like the reincarnation of a wolf.
Yeah, that spot right above your eyebrows, right? Just putting it right into somebody's face.
Right.
So a lot will be called on. We'll see who delivers.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy that ultimately needs to deliver the most is the coordinator.
Yes. We're in agreement on that.
Yes. Vance Joseph, this is kind of a big game for him. Bix Picks. You can sign up for Bix Picks. Text PICK to 620-620 to get entered and compete for a weekly prize from Pizza Hut. You'll also be competing against Dan Bickley for your chance to win the grand prize. 75-inch TV, courtesy of Corona Extra. Once again, that's PICK to 620-620.
Last 2 weeks, I mean, we had a 200-yard rusher. We had a 200-yard rusher the last 2 weeks, so, you know, I get where he's coming from, but, you know, that was the last 2 weeks. You know, this week is totally different. We're going to get everybody's best this week. They're going to get our whole team's best, and that starts with me. They're going to get my best this week, and we're going to go out there and we're going to kick their ass. This is the way I'm feeling.
Is it a must-win?
I wouldn't say it's a must-win. We're going to kick their ass, though. Make sure you put that up there. We're going to kick their ass.
Oh, memories. You go into a primetime game, which have been few and far between for the Arizona Cardinals over the last few seasons, you start thinking, you start going down memory lane. That was 2 years ago, going into a Thursday night game on October 18th, 2018, Cardinals hosting the Denver Broncos. That was Von Miller. And I remember having the discussions on this show. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is what this Cardinal team needs. The Broncos are terrible. Von Miller's coming out and saying, we're going to kick their ass on Thursday night football. Guess what happened?
Guess
Von Miller was right.
That was, we were talking about this before the show today, and I think I have suppressed memories from that game. Was that the last truly embarrassing game for the Arizona? I mean, really?
No, I mean, that was only halfway through that year. They had plenty of football left to play in 2018.
But did they play any on big stages?
No, that was the only national game they had that year.
So this was the last truly traumatic, embarrassing moment. And it's worth noting that today is the anniversary of the Dennis Green meltdown Chicago Bears game.
Well, the whole team melted down.
Right.
Dennis gets all the attention, but
the Denver one was outrageous in that Von Miller called out the Cardinals and the Cardinals rolled over.
Well,
just flat out rolled over.
And I remember monitoring that game a little bit because I was covering an ASU game the same night. It was one of those weird Thursday nights where there was regular season action at both stadiums.
Yeah.
So I'm watching from the press box at Sun Devil Stadium, and it couldn't have started any worse, and then it just continued to get worse from there. Here's some actual audio from the beginning of that broadcast with Dave Pasch and Ron Wolfley.
So David Johnson and Chase Edmonds are both in the game, and they're both flexed out wide. Three men wide to the right. And the Cardinals look like they're confused. David Johnson confused. So is Chase Edmonds. They're all looking to the sideline, and they have to call a timeout. Great start.
That, ladies and gentlemen, was the second play of the game.
Yeah.
There was a handoff to David Johnson to start the game. Then that formation. Then the timeout.
And then on the third play of the game.
What's even better is coming out of the timeout. Do you have that?
Two receivers to the right and three to the left, and Rosen in shotgun. Von Miller lined up at left defensive end. He's against Andre Smith. Rosen's pass tipped, and it is picked off at the 15-yard line by Davis, running it back to the 10 to the 5, dives for the end zone, and in for a touchdown. 59 seconds into the game off a deflection. Todd Davis with a pick six for the Broncos.
That came right after the timeout, based on an offense that had no idea what Mike McCoy was trying to do.
Yeah, 45-10 was the final score. In the closing stages of that game, Josh Rosen, who did not play well, nobody played well, he's still in there.
Three receivers to Rosen's left, one to the right. Rosen in shotgun with Chase Edmonds in the backfield. Rosen, straight drop back. In trouble. Sacked by Chubb at the 32. And Rosen is hurt. This is why you get him out of the game earlier. Oh, no. He's trying to walk it off. He's hobbling to the Cardinals sideline, but he shouldn't be in the game in the first place.
It was about as bad as it could go, and that was what led to the firing of Mike McCoy, the handing of the offense to Byron Leftwich. Doesn't it seem like 100 years ago?
Don't you just love the pointed commentary from Dave Pasch?
But it's so weird.
Just love it.
When you look at recent history of the Cardinals playing primetime games, and that could either be a Thursday night game, a Monday night game, or the Sunday night game.
All right.
They had one last year, the Thursday night game. They lost at home to San Francisco. That was their only national game in 2018. In 2017, they had two. They lost a Thursday night game at home to Seattle, and they lost a Monday night game to Dallas. That was their last Monday night game, to 28-17. There was a year, 2015, Beck, the Cardinals played, 2016, they had three national primetime games in a row. They played a Thursday night game at San Francisco and won 33-21. They came home for Monday night football against the Jets and beat them 28-3. Then they got the Sunday night game against Seattle and tied 6-6.
Three in a row.
Three straight primetime games for the Cardinals as recently as 2016.
Holy cow. That's when you know the Cardinals will, that's when you know Cliff Kingsbury and his offense will have arrived. When those games start coming back.
Yeah. When you don't get the one, hey, everybody's going to play one of these games. Yeah, when you start getting the Sunday night games again, you're exactly right. The 2015 season where they went 13-3, five primetime games in the regular season, 5-0 in those games. That's why everybody was picking the Cardinals to win the Super Bowl the next year, by the way.
Meanwhile, that Bears game, that will always go down as one of the worst memories ever. I went back through the highlights again. The fact that the Bears came back from 20 down on two fumbles returned for touchdowns and a punt return returned for a touchdown.
I had season tickets that year.
Insanity.
It's still the strangest football game I've ever watched in person. Maybe the strangest football game I've ever watched at all. It made no sense.
You were a season ticket holder that year?
That was the first year of the new stadium, so I split season tickets with a buddy of mine, and we both went to that game. And I remember I was just seething walking out of the stadium because nothing made sense. The whole game, we had two Bears fans in front of us who, before the game, they were rowdy, and they're drinking, and they're high-fiving, and, you know, because the Bears were really good that year.
Yeah. Devin Hastar.
The Cardinals come out and start dominating the game.
Urlacher.
They get really quiet for the rest of the game. After the game ends, all the Bears fans that were there were going nuts. These two guys turned around to me and my buddy and just looked at us and go, "We're sorry."
Really?
Yeah. They didn't have any words. They're like, "We're sorry." No way the Bears
should have
won
that. That's
got to
be the worst thing in the world when you get pitied by an opposing fan base. Truly pitied.
Oh, yeah.
That's an awful feeling. You don't want that.
Why do you think I'm so mad walking out of the stadium?
Ugh.
And I had to take a bus to where I parked my car.
Oh boy.
That was even worse.
Well, you missed the fireworks then.
I did.
The Dennis Green press conference.
Yeah, I didn't find out about that till the next day.
Which was truly, truly, it really just erupted out of nowhere. And it was just, oh my goodness, was it priceless.
I mean, there are some, for a team that doesn't play a ton on Monday Night Football, there are some real memories that are attached to the Cardinals.
Uh-huh.
Aeneas Williams ended the career of Steve Young on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
The first Monday Night Football game, first home game for the Cardinals when they moved against Herschel Walker and the Dallas Cowboys. The weird Al Del Greco can run it in from 40 yards right before halftime call. They lost that game by 3. How about when Rod Tidwell made all that money on Monday Night Football?
That too. So you never know what you're going to get with this football team in the prime time, is I guess what you're saying.
Yes.
We'll find out Monday
night. Look, I think this has the makings of being another weird football game. When you talk about two teams that have that potential offensively, and two teams whose defense, one defense definitely is not very good, and the best defense, I think it could be a shootout. It could come down to one play. I don't know what to expect.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. Should be fun, though. Coming up next, we will get the viewpoint from Dallas, as we'll be joined by John Machota, who covers the Cowboys for The Athletic. That is straight ahead. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The Bears are who we thought they were.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Going back home, playing in Dallas, obviously a big game for us on Monday night in front of everybody.
I mean, this is what he's worked hard for his entire life, to have moments like this.
Certainly, it'll be worthy of the national stage.
Bickley and Marotta talk Cardinals, Cowboys, Monday Night Football, now.
Yeah, week 6, Monday night, Cardinals-Cowboys at AT&T Stadium in Arlington. Here to give us the Dallas perspective, he covers the Dallas Cowboys for The Athletic. John Machota, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline. John, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
No problem at all. I thought I was going to be a little late. We've been, we just got done doing our Zoom interviews that we do on a daily basis here, the new normal for covering these teams.
Yeah, aren't those great, by the way, John?
yeah, it's wonderful. It just totally takes. Well, I can tell you this real quick. The one that really hurts us the most is with Dak. It's just because Dak Prescott's been so great to us, like in the locker room. Like after he does the main media scrum, like in front of the cameras and that, there's so many times where he'll just sit there for like another 10, 15 minutes with all the beat writers. And I mean, pretty much you can ask him anything. Mm-hmm. And most of it's on the record. So that's probably been for us as a group, the thing that's hurt the most this year is not being able to get a lot of the stuff we were able to get from him in previous seasons.
Yeah, my partner keeps telling me he's a good guy, and I think you both got me convinced now with Dak Prescott. Let me ask you about his replacement in Andy Dalton. How equipped is he to lead this team at this point in his career? What do his teammates think of him? How do you think he's going to perform with this opportunity now that he's got the team from the start of this game and, you know, for the foreseeable future?
You know, I think he's going to perform pretty well. The only thing that would make me think that he'll have some issues is just the fact that the Cowboys' offensive line is extremely banged up. I mean, they're starting a rookie, undrafted rookie free agent at right tackle and a guy who was an undrafted rookie free agent last year at left tackle. I mean, that's a significant drop-off from having Lyle Collins on one side and Tyron Smith on the other. Yeah. So, you know, Andy's mobile. He's not as mobile as Dak was, but he's got enough mobility, and obviously he's played the game long enough, and you know, definitely during some of those last 2 years in Cincinnati, it wasn't like he had great offensive line play. But the thing is that I think he's got enough weapons around him with CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup and Zeke that he should be able to keep this offense humming at a pretty high rate. I don't know if it's going to be as what it was where Dak was averaging like, you know, over 400 yards passing per game there for a while. But I still think it's going to be one of the better offenses in the league. And because of that, I really see this Monday night game being another shootout. I mean, that's the way the Cowboys games have pretty much been, where it's high scoring and it comes down to a few plays in the fourth quarter. And I think Andy will be good enough to hang and keep this game close throughout. But it does need to be noted these are receivers that he wasn't getting a ton of work with up until this past week just because he was working with the second team. And so, you know, there could be a little bit of growing pains there. But, I mean, just because of the resume he has, I don't think it's going to take him long to get on the same page with some of those guys.
John Machota from The Athletic, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Defensively, I know there's been injuries on that side of the ball, but the Cowboys have just been wretched defensively. You know, through five games, what's the biggest reason for that, in your opinion, John?
It's really that they're just changing a defensive style from what they've been for so long under Rod Marinelli, where they were particularly up front on the defensive line. It was a very attacking front four. That was basically how they generated the majority of their pass rush. They very rarely blitzed under Rod Marinelli. It was, you know, let's get four of our best rushers on the line and let's get upfield and let's, you know, cause problems for opposing quarterbacks. And under Mike Nolan's system, they're much more multiple. You'll see some 3-4 looks in there. Obviously that helps with a guy like Alden Smith, who's used to playing in that style, but I don't know that it's been the best fit for DeMarcus Lawrence and Everson Griffin and Tyrone Crawford and some of the other guys that have been, you know, used to a little bit more 4-3 type fronts. So it's taken them a while to get acclimated, and obviously not having the offseason that you normally would have, that has hurt tremendously, not having the preseason game. So it's like you can see some signs of them improving, but I don't know. The way that they've played and mistakes that they've made, I thought it would be a middle-of-the-pack defense this year, and I don't know if it'll even get to that level even by the end of the season. It hasn't clicked, and obviously injuries have hurt too. But I think at their best, they might be middle of the pack, but I don't think you're going to get much more than that.
All right, Kyler Murray's homecoming is a big story here, obviously. What about where you're at? What about in Texas? Is the return of this high school legend to this stadium, is it a big deal in Texas?
It is, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, there's obviously a lot of outstanding high school football players that have played in the state. I'm originally from Detroit, and so I've been down here now almost 10 years. And so when I first got down here, I was covering high schools for a few years, and I got to cover some of Kyler's games. And I was immediately, I mean, it's like, this is the best high school football player I've ever seen. And that obviously hasn't changed since. And people down here are very aware of him because not only was he just super dynamic and just, you know, a highlight reel one after another, but it was just the fact that, like, he played at Allen High School, which is just like a football power. I mean, it's like, again, being from Detroit, like there's nothing like that I've seen when I came down here, and they had this, you know, stadium that they play in that's like bigger than some college stadiums. and they just, I remember this. So I'm covering this one game up in the press box. It's not at their home stadium. And there's like 8 buses in a row that are just, you can see them coming down the street. And I said to somebody, I was like, oh, is that the football team? They're like, oh, no, the football team will be here in a little bit. Those are all the buses just for Allen's band. Their band is crazy. And so it's just such a big deal down here. And then he's the face of it. They win 3 state titles. And I'll be honest with you, they were one of the more talented teams every single game they played. But, I mean, I watched some games against them playing against some really good, like, DeSoto teams, which is another power here. And there were times where they were not going to win those games if Kyler Murray didn't, you know, put it on his back and take it to another level. And so all those high school fans, everybody, whether you rooted for Allen or not, are excited about seeing him come back. And then the fact that there's a lot of Oklahoma fans around here who are obviously thrilled to see him. So, yeah, it's gonna be a huge deal. And then you just add in there, it's Monday Night Football. Yeah, no, it's a big deal here for sure.
John Machota covers the Cowboys for The Athletic. He's our guest here on Bickley and Murata. Obviously, with the Dak injury, and it was gruesome, and we all saw it, and one of the immediate reactions from around, you know, football social media was anger towards Jerry Jones for not acquiescing and giving Dak Prescott the deal that most quarterbacks get at that point of his career. In the days that have followed, John, how palpable is the anger from the Cowboys fan base toward the owner?
Oh, it's pretty strong, but I feel like he's always the person that everybody looks at. And, I mean, it's his own fault. I mean, it's because he always puts himself out there, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like it kind of goes back to, you know, in the offseason, he didn't comment about George Floyd's death when there were a lot of other, you know, teams that were putting out things and saying a lot of things. And there were even players that, you know, like Richard Sherman, who were like, well, I'd like to hear something from Jerry Jones. He's always, you know, he's always got an opinion on everything. Why isn't he talking about this? And,
yeah.
And while you sit there and you're like, well, he doesn't need to talk about everything. And then you sit there and you're like, well, he kind of does. So he has no problem putting himself in there and being the face of all this. And so he doesn't shy away from it. And he's been asked about it. He was asked about it on Tuesday. And, you know, he went into the same stuff that he said in the offseason when they weren't able to get the deal done. And it's that he's looking out for not just Dak, but also the success of this team going forward and was trying to piece it around to where, you know, he's got still enough cap room to be able to add some other pieces and make this a Super Bowl, you know, team. And so he's not going to back off that. I do think it's kind of funny that fans say that because there's obviously two sides to this stuff. It's,
sure.
You can say it's all in Jerry Jones if he'd never made any offer and or a respectable one. I mean, the last offer, I believe it was a little over $100 million guaranteed, maybe around $110 million. So I understand where Dak's coming from. He wants to be one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. So he doesn't have to take that deal. He deserves to get every last dollar that he can possibly get. But at the same time, like, it's not like the Cowboys didn't like make any effort to sign him. And they're just like, hey, let's just franchise this guy for a couple of years and let him go. Like, and I feel like some fans act that way. And that's not the case. There's two sides to this thing, but Jerry is such a visible part of it that he's just an easy person to point to and put the blame on. And you know how it is in sports. A lot of times you argue sports, you try and argue one side or the other, but how often are really the issues, you know, black and white, one side or the other? There's a lot of gray area there. So with that being said, I would put 70% of the blame on Jerry Jones.
I gotcha.
All right, last question for you, my man. I'm curious what kind of team the Cardinals are going to be encountering in the Cowboys. What are your thoughts on that, given the way the Dak Prescott injury went down, the way that Andy Dalton came in and you guys were able to see that game to the finish line and win that game? Is that a powerful driving force? Just give me an idea of emotionally where the Cowboys are at going into this game.
Yeah, that's a good point. There is a lot. There's a lot they're dealing with right now, not to mention that they've significantly underperformed what the expectations were. And so primetime game, Monday Night Football, that obviously adds something to it. But I don't really know that we're going to know until the game starts. I mean, Dak was out here yesterday, and from everything I've heard, all the players and coaches said everyone was fired up to see him, and obviously that's an emotional lift because he's the unquestioned leader of this team. There's just no doubt about that. And so that helps, but he's not going to be out there, you know, Monday. And for most of the guys on the team, that he's been the only quarterback they have, and he's been their starter every game since 2016. And so because of that, we really don't know. I can say one thing right off the bat is that this offense was having a lot of problems taking care of the football. And even once Andy Dalton came into that game after Dak got hurt, he gets sacked on the first play, and then a couple series later, he fumbles a snap from the center. So those have been huge issues for this team. And so if they take care of the ball, you know, I think that that'll be a good steadying sign that you know, their emotions are in the right spot. But I'm not really sure. I don't think that we'll know until the game starts.
Yeah. John, thanks so much for joining us today and all the insight from Dallas. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Anytime.
Thank you. John Machota covers the Cowboys for The Athletic. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, Coulter Infinity. Luxury cars, legendary service. Visit CoulterInfinity.com. Coming up next, it's not just Cardinals Cowboys in Week 6. We got a six-pack of games we're going over next. It's Bickley and Murata on this Football Friday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta preview their six favorite games coming up this weekend.
Hey, when I have to do that. What? A mouthful of food and the segment starts and I gotta spit it out.
Yeah. Never stops Jarrett. He just keeps chewing.
He'll chew right into the microphone. Yeah, we do this every Friday, six-pack of games. We start the six-pack this week. Sunday morning, 10 a.m. kickoff in Foxborough. Broncos, 1-3 at the Patriots, 2-2. I guess we know if there is a game, Cam Newton's going to play quarterback. Now, Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots for ESPN.com, Patriots plan to place offensive lineman James Ferentz on the COVID-19 reserve list. Ferentz had practiced on Thursday. Had the Patriots practiced on Wednesday, the club said he would not have practiced that day due to non-injury reasons. So I don't think they're out of the woods yet.
Not necessarily, but the NFL, according to Adam Schefter, has told the Broncos to get on the plane and be ready to go. You're playing football. So I think that if this doesn't spread crazy, the NFL is going to jam this game in.
Yeah, I think by jamming the game in, I think you're also going to see a pretty one-sided affair.
I think you're right.
The Patriots are really adept at running the football. I think they're going to get a steady diet of that against Denver. And Denver is a team, they're angry right now, too, because they had to practice all last week. And then, oh, by the way, you practiced all week to go into your bye. Have fun with that. They're just not very good.
Yeah.
And they're shorthanded as well. Still questions at the quarterback position. I like the Patriots big in this game.
Yeah, so do I.
Game number two of our six-pack. Cleveland and Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh, the Browns off to a surprising 4-1 start. The Steelers, one of the undefeated teams left at 4-0. Last week, we saw the Chase Claypool coming out party. He had four touchdowns. I was able to get him in our fantasy league, by the way.
So you're the one who took him from me?
I was the one.
You're the one who took him from me.
Yeah. Be mad at me. I think we play this week, too.
Do we really?
Yeah. Wouldn't it be just poetic if Chase Claypool scored put five touchdowns on your head?
Wow.
Anyway.
That's brutal.
This will be the first game for Myles Garrett against the Steelers since since he almost killed Mason Rudolph with a helmet.
Yeah.
See Mason Rudolph probably.
This is one of the NFL's oldest rivalries. It's it's generally been a one-sided rivalry. When you talk about rivalries that are like big brother, little brother, hammer and nail, if you wanted this is the NFL version of like the Dodgers Diamondbacks. Where Browns fans want it to mean something so bad, but the Steelers and their fans just like, stop it, you're Cleveland. This is different. Cleveland's on a nice little roll, and as you said, the Steelers are unbeaten. It's a good game. I like this one.
The Browns have not had five straight wins since 1995.
Wow.
That's what they're going for. Pittsburgh is a three-point favorite. I'm going to go with the home team here. I'm starting to believe a little bit more in the Browns, but I don't know if I'm to the point where I'm convinced they can go win in Pittsburgh.
I think I'm with you. I'm double-checking my Bix picks, and I'll tell you exactly what I did, because I know I was going back and forth this game for the longest period of time. I don't have it handy. I think I stuck with Pittsburgh, but I went back and forth with this thing for a while. This could be a huge moment for the Browns. After all they went through last year.
Mm-hmm. Game number three. Another early game in Nashville. The undefeated Tennessee Titans hosting the newly resurgent and happy and carefree Houston Texans at 1-4. It's not a great week of games. This is certainly not among the sexier matchups this week.
Yeah.
But you're smelling an upset here, aren't you?
I may be way off about this one, but I do pick the Texans to win this game. I just think they're due to do something good. And I think the Titans are coming off an emotional performance, a good performance. They hadn't played in a long time. I think they're going to have a little bit of a dip. And yes, I did take the Steelers in a close win over the Browns. Officially, just so you know.
I like Tennessee in this one.
Yeah.
And came across this stat.
I understand why you do.
Ryan Tannehill is 11-3 as the Titans starting quarterback. For a guy that I thought was just scrap heap material after his time in Miami, I give him credit for turning his career around with the Titans. I like the Titans by by 10 in this one. To the late afternoon games, we kind of talked about it earlier, the matchup between quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers against Tom Brady, Packers and Buccaneers. Packers, again, one of the undefeated teams, and the Buccaneers, the last glimpse we had of Tom Brady, couldn't count to four.
Yeah.
No, that was 2 weeks ago, wasn't it?
No.
I don't know. I've lost all track of time.
No, they just lost. I think you're right. Yeah, well, you know
either
what?
Either way.
I've lost all track of time, too.
Wait, what day is today?
Today is Friday. We do that I can help you with.
Yeah, that was the last game. It was the Thursday night game against Chicago.
Yeah,
okay,
that's
I was
what
right.
I thought. It was the last game.
I hate when you say something and then you're like, "Why did I put that out there? I wasn't sure about that."
I think the fact that they've
that's had, my brand. Come on.
Yeah, right.
Sorry.
They've had extra time to prep, and I just think Tampa's got a good game in them, and I think it's going to happen this weekend.
I disagree. I'm riding this Packer train. Devontae Adams is going to be back. I like the Packers to beat the Buccaneers in Tampa. Even though Green Bay is the road favorite at a point and a half. Sunday night game, L.A. Rams, San Francisco 49ers. And, only the second in-division game in the NFC West so far this season.
Yeah.
And both of them have involved the San Francisco 49ers. And like the first one, Bick, I think it's going to have the same outcome. I like the Rams to beat the Niners.
Yeah, this is not what I did not expect when the season began. I thought the 49ers were going to be miles beyond the Rams. Injuries have played a big deal in this, but the Rams seem to have gotten something of their mojo back. And I'm going with the Rams as well.
Yeah, then we're going to do one of the Monday games. There's a doubleheader, of course, preceding Cardinals-Cowboys. We got Kansas City and Buffalo going at it on Monday afternoon. A 2 o'clock kickoff on Monday afternoon. This is a good game. Both teams coming off their first loss of the season.
Right.
Kansas City really licking their wounds after giving up 40 to the Raiders. This game in Buffalo.
Yep.
Kansas City a 5-point favorite on the road.
It's a good time to play a football game in Buffalo. It's about probably the last weekend you want to do it. But I think Kansas City, coming off of what happened to them last week, they're going to be quite ready for this one. I'm picking the Chiefs.
Yeah, I like the Chiefs as well. Was really disappointed in the performance by Buffalo. Tennessee is good, but I was surprised at how easily they handed Buffalo.
Yeah.
On that, again, I lost track of days, that Tuesday night affair. There you go. There's our NFL Week 6 six-pack. Coming up next, it's 1 o'clock. It's time for Social Studies. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.